This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, for the last few months, there's been a lot of he say, she say, a lot of nail biting, a lot of head scratching going on. But for the next 5 years, it's a lot of flock going on. Let's go, baby. Let's go. Let's go, man. Can't wait to get there. Can't wait to be there. Can't wait to light up M&T for the next 5 years, man. Let's get it.
The way that we feel about Lamar, it's the market plus, you know, if that makes sense. Like, we've seen Lamar. We've won lots of games with Lamar. We're around him all the time. And we do feel that he's the best quarterback in the NFL. And I think this contract reflects that.
So the deal got done after we got done yesterday. And that's a big reason why I felt like nothing changed. Actually, they only added to it. I felt like the Ravens won night one, round one of the NFL draft before it even got started. Because, A, contrary to a lot of speculation, they didn't end up trading their franchise quarterback. B, or A2, they kept their quarterback happy for the next 5 years by making him the highest paid player in NFL history, although in all likelihood, temporarily. And C, they went and got said quarterback yet another weapon in the passing game in the form of Boston College's Zay Flowers, who some consider the best receiver in this class. And add him to the recent signing of Odell Beckham, as well as if you want to throw Nelson Aguilar in there, along with some of the holdovers that they have. And we'll see what else the Ravens have in store for the draft. What I have in store for you, and I know there's an I told you so coming from me later, so I'm going to get mine out first. I seem to remember somebody saying, hey, man, you know, we give a little too much praise to the Ravens. You know, we give too much love to the Ravens. The Ravens, like, this is why I said there were no bad guys in this negotiation, that it was business and never personal, that it was never too far gone, that it was always a deal to get done, thanks in part to Jalen Hurts getting his deal done. But, like, all's well that ends well, the Ravens get the deal done. For all the hue and cry and gnashing of teeth about, oh, the Ravens are doing Lamar Jackson dirty, or Lamar Jackson needs an agent, and he dropping the bag, and he fumbling the bag, and the Ravens are cheap, and yet they got the deal done. They got the deal done. He's got another receiver. Ravens doing what the Ravens tend to do. And furthermore, before I pass it to you, Michael, I'll just go ahead and set the table like this. Who nailed it in the first round besides the Ravens? Just call me Morris Day and the Tide, because I'm doing the bird today, Michael. The Ravens.
Okay.
The Eagles did what the Eagles always do. The Seahawks got the best cornerback and the best wide receiver with their two picks. The Cardinals, our favorite fixer-upper, okay, get my favorite player, former Ohio State journalist and offensive tackle Paris Johnson Jr.
That's right.
And they get future picks from the Texans. And last but not least, Michael, another team that nailed it, the Atlanta Falcons. I've been trying to tell you to stop devaluing the running back position, my friend.
Yes, you have.
Okay? I've been trying to educate you on the fact that you have to take the best player, especially, as Arthur Smith said, Bijan Robinson's more than a running back. And now the Falcons' offense is rather dirty. So shout out to all the bird teams. Shout out to Morris the
I like it.
All right. Who nailed it for you? I know I said a lot there. You are allowed to retort.
Let's go back.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's go back to this. You're like, oh, yeah, the Ravens do what the Ravens do. The Ravens are suspect, starting with the fact that my man Eric DaCosta said Lamar Jackson is the best quarterback in the NFL. I don't believe you. I don't believe it. Now, if you had said, Eric.
I don't believe you.
You know, like Ron Burgundy. You know what?
I thought you were Alonzo. I don't believe you.
Or Alonzo. I don't believe
you. Put it in the back. Bang. Yeah. Cold X.
Yeah. Boom, because you never know. Now, if Eric DaCosta had said Lamar Jackson is the best quarterback for Baltimore, for the city and for this franchise, for what we're trying to do. He fits everything on the field and off the field, what we're trying to represent. Yeah, I agree with him. I agree with him, and I agree with that sentiment, because Lamar Jackson does belong in Baltimore. I'm glad to see that it worked out, that he's getting not a fully guaranteed contract, but a contract very similar, very similar to Jalen Hurts. His deal, just slightly better. Total value, $5 million if you just go with the numbers, and then the guarantees are slightly better than Jalen Hurts' guarantees. But the Ravens still have some questions to answer. We'll see. You mentioned, you did say this. You said this. I'm just quoting you. You said, if you want to throw Nelson Aguilar in there. I knew you were funny. I didn't know you were that funny. Okay, Nelson Aguilar. You did. You just said that.
He's not there. I did. He's not there. One. I'm saying they've.
I know.
They've overhauled the receiving room.
He's a part of, come on, but if he's a part of the equation, you got work to do.
Fine.
Odell Beckham Jr. Yes, great name, but Odell has not played in a whole year. The Ravens gave him more money than anybody else would have given him. That's question
mark. That's not even my point. Is he trying to take care of their quarterback? Yeah, that's all I was saying. I'm not saying Odell is. Maybe, 2016.
Yeah, they're trying to take care of their, they're trying to take care of their quarterback, but there are easier ways to do it. The fact that Lamar Jackson has a deal doesn't invalidate all the things that people said about Lamar and the Ravens. The Ravens have some questions to answer still, and because the Ravens, first of all, we don't know if the receivers are going to work out. Yeah, they're trying, but we don't know if the receivers are going to work out. They've had some issues in the last few years with their personnel, with their training staff. These things are still on the table. And Lamar still, without an agent, still has left lots of money on the table that he'll never make up. I'm glad he got his deal now.
No, that's fair.
But he did leave money on the table.
But if we're going to be fair, let's be fair. This was never a football conversation, whether or not they knew what they were doing from a football standpoint. It was, why do they treat their players so badly? It was, they did the same thing with Joe Flacco. It was, why don't they just pay the man, pay the man, pay the man? Right. But as I said, it took two. There was no bad guy, because he was entitled to want what he wanted, and they were entitled to say Deshaun Watson was an outlier. And for all the panic about whether or not Lamar Jackson had a future in Baltimore, ultimately, the deal got done. Because as I said, there were no games being played anytime soon.
Don't turn this around. Listen. Hold on. This is what happened.
You're turning it into a football thing. If you want to nitpick their roster, be my guest. But ultimately, they end up with a really good wide receiver prospect, and they end up with their quarterback. So what was all the fuss about?
Hold on. I just want to point out, for those listening,
like, to professorial look, by the way. That's very good Will Hunting of you. Go ahead.
Thank you. As a business to take care of earlier today. But anyway, for those listening to Brother from Another, point out that this is not a media. It's the media. No. Who made this an issue? It wasn't the media. It was Lamar Jackson, who very astutely, the same time his head coach was having a press conference in Arizona,
Lamar Jackson requested a trade.
Puts out a tweet. He has to be traded.
I'm talking about you. You were the one that said, no. This ain't about the media. This ain't about Lamar. This is about me and you.
Right.
And you know how highly I regard that organization. And
Lamar Jackson
and
had
others
a problem with them.
Came on this show every single day telling me how effed up the Ravens were for not giving Lamar Jackson what he wanted.
And guess who?
That's what you told me.
Guess who agreed with me?
Who?
Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, who tweeted.
Did he?
Clearly, Mr. Trade Me wasn't serious
when he continued negotiating, and he got a deal done that wasn't fully guaranteed.
He said, trade me. Something changed. The relationship changed. But at one point, Lamar Jackson did think that there was a villain.
He thought the villain was a Raven. All that changed was him. Lamar Jackson's agent told Lamar Jackson, hey, man, that guaranteed deal ain't happening. Except being the highest paid player in NFL history. And the Ravens said, here you go. It never got personal. It never got that contentious. He did what a player representing himself does, which is trade me. It clearly wasn't personal when they were still communicating even after said trade requests.
It got personal, and then there was a resolution. But at one point, now, it's not personal today. Just because it's not personal today, because they have a deal.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that there was a process.
All I'm saying is you and I have seen this a million times, Michael.
Maybe
you've
there was some, maybe
you've not
there was
seen
some
this story a million times. You've not seen this story a million times where people say, you know, I will never wear this uniform again, or trade me, or I don't want to be here, and a deal gets done. And that's all I was saying the whole time, was it's like, yo, there are no bad guys here. Let the situation play out. He was never going to play anywhere else. He was never going
anywhere else
because nobody else, A, nobody else wanted to get him or wanted to give up what it was going to take to get him financially or draft capital wise. B, the Ravens always wanted him back, contrary to popular opinion. But then you add on top of that, okay, you're right, you got
contrary
me.
To his, contrary to his opinion.
Well, no, they didn't want him back. They didn't, they didn't want him back on his terms. Okay, let's send
Lamar.
He may have felt some kind of way because they wouldn't come where he wanted them to come. Ultimately, they met in the middle. But you're right. You got me on, okay, Odell Beckham and Nelson Aguilar. I'm not saying that though they're the second coming. I'm saying there are efforts on the part of the Ravens, both financially and personnel-wise, to accommodate their franchise quarterback. So, again, showing how it's done. Deal gets done. Get a good player in the first round. We'll see what else they do, because that's what the Ravens do. Do you want to highlight any other teams that stood out to you? Like, you want to tell me I was right about the Falcons, and for that matter, the Lions taking running backs in the top 12. You on here talking
about
running backs. You know, you don't take a running back in the first round. I'm like, Michael, listen, man. Go ahead. Let me stop.
I don't know about our Lions. Our Lions yesterday? I don't know what our Lions were doing. I'm really feeling it. I'm feeling the Lions. I'm not sure I understand it. One day, maybe
they drafted a running back and an off-ball linebacker.
Like old school, like this is like, you know, we talk about 1997. I'm like, you drafting Jack Campbell, that's a linebacker's name. Like you drafting a middle linebacker from Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the first round. And then look at Brad Holmes getting hyped. What, Brad, why
that's
is he getting
my dog
hyped?
Right there.
Why you?
Because I
love
Brad
Holmes.
I trust
Brad
Holmes. I trust Brad Holmes. You
look
know?
That's like Dan Campbell when Dan Campbell was playing. That's like one of those drafts. What are y'all doing? And they had an opportunity, Mike. They could have, if you want a running back who could do it all, let's see, man, I wish we had a number 6 pick so we could draft Bijan Robinson. Oh, you did. You did. Hey, so you didn't even have to trade. If you wanted the linebacker and the running back,
all jokes aside,
you could have had the best linebacker and you could have had Jack Campbell without making any trades.
All jokes aside, there were some teams. Okay, but they moved back from 6 to 12 with Arizona. Yeah, I loved Arizona
picks.
But all jokes aside, there were some teams who had Jahmyr Gibbs as the highest rated running back or did not have a whole lot of separation between Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. So from a draft, you know, playing draft game standpoint, if you slide down 6 spots, pick up some capital, and at the same time get a player that you had rated as high, if not higher, than Bijan Robinson, that's a pretty good move.
Yeah, that is. But to that, can I just say this? I know it will never happen. I just want to say it. I want to see some receipts from these teams. We took him off our board. Okay, proof. He was the highest rated player on our board. We were shocked. We got him at 25. I need proof. You had the 25th player, 28, 19. He's top rated on your board. Let me see your damn board and let me know your history. Because I don't believe, back to this, I don't believe you. I don't believe these teams say, hey, we had Jahmyr and Bijan side by side. No, you didn't. And if you did, what else? Give me your history of the last 5 years. What else have you done? I want to see your draft perform. What kind of results have you gotten off the field and on the field if your rating system works in such a way? So, yeah, I mean, everybody, if you watched it last night, everybody was the Detroit
draft. That's the beauty of the draft.
Everybody drafted.
Everybody's happy. Everybody's happy. It went according to everybody's plan. That's the beauty of it.
Right.
Everybody's happy.
Okay, so you did. So you weren't feeling Detroit. Yeah, that's fine. I'll get plenty of people on the Lions bandwagon.
But
I'll
tell
you what, on the Lions bandwagon.
Seattle.
Seattle? Yeah, yeah.
Seattle,
yeah.
Again. And it's a continuum. Look, I understand that the most attention went to Houston, which got, you know, back-to-back, the best quarterback, or probably the best player in the draft, C.J. Stroud. Okay, best quarterback in the draft, C.J. Stroud. And then they get Will Anderson. Nice. But Houston has a long way to go, so I'm not going to just look at it as, hey, look what happened last night. Seattle was a playoff team last year, had a terrific draft in 2022.
They nailed it.
Here they come back in 23. Here they come back. So they got Tariq Woolen last year. On the other side, they get my man from the Big Ten. Shout out Illinois, Big Ten, Devin Witherspoon. Great at number 5. Didn't see that one coming. And then to get Jaxon Smith-Njigba at number 20? Yeah. Are you serious? That is
That's a great job.
Quarterback
CB1 and WR1. That's pretty good. Yeah, quarterback 1 and wide receiver 1.
Even WR3. They can add WR3 because they don't need to be WR1.
No, I mean, in this draft class. I mentioned Zay Flowers earlier, but they may have gotten the top, a lot of people's top cornerback and top wide receiver. And I'm agreeing with you on Seattle. And now, instead of drafting an heir apparent to Geno Smith, they end up further complimenting Geno Smith with a potentially dynamic third or maybe one day number two or even number one wide receiver given his upside. But and then the Eagles. I mean, like, this Georgia to Philadelphia pipeline is something. Like, if anybody – like, look, say what you want about Jalen Carter. A lot of this is development, and great teams and great organizations know how to bring out the best in players. And so if Jalen Carter was going to go anywhere – and obviously, there's a Jordan Davis connection. There's a N'Kobe Dean connection. And now the Nolan Smith connection. If Jalen Carter's going to go anywhere and flourish, it was going to be Philadelphia. And again, all jokes aside, you were telling me about running backs. And I think Atlanta did the same thing. If I can keep connecting these bird mascots. It's like, hey, yeah, we got a running back. But this guy is a dynamic playmaker, an impact player. He may be designated as a running back, but he's more than that. The Eagles are like, yeah, we got a good pass rush. You know, they lost Hargrove and that sort of thing. But, yeah, we got a good pass rush. Yeah, you know, yeah, we're deep on at defensive line. But, like, we can make a strength even stronger. And we can get maybe the best talent in the draft. And Nolan Smith, on and off the field, is a tone setter in the truest sense of the word. So, I mean, that's how the elite organizations, going back to the Ravens when I say this, whether it's the Ravens, whether it's the Eagles, whether it's the Seahawks, there's a reason why these elite organizations stay elite, because they have not only great scouting, but an infrastructure that's going to develop and support players, even if they may have some question marks or some red flags about them, to be the best versions of themselves within their systems.
I'm going to give a friend of mine sent me this text. He's an Eagles fan, and he said the verdict is almost completely in. He said the Eagles traded Carson Wentz and a 2022 first and got back A.J. Brown, Jalen Carter, and a 2024 second. I mean, so you think about that. Mike, you're right. Elite franchises, the Eagles, you know, went to the Super Bowl last year. We all talked about them and how wonderfully they built this team, and it continues. They are... not that your roster wins you anything. I mean, it's a part of it, but, you know, lots of championships have been won on paper but not actually realized. But the Eagles have the best roster in the National Football League. Top to bottom, they've got the best roster, especially at important trench positions. Offensive and defensive lines are impeccable, and they just added to it last night.
Hey, the fun's just getting started. Round 2 and 3 on deck tonight with some big names still in the green room.
If I get invited and, like, if I know, like, I'll be a pretty high pick, I'll definitely go. I'm looking forward to going, but I don't want to go if like, I could be, like, a second-round pick, you know? You don't want to be that. You don't want to have the camera just on you all day.
Oh, man. You hate that was prophetic from Will Levis to Sean Reed from The Athletic. Covers the Raiders and the NFL. Let's start with the number 7 pick. A lot of people have mocked Will Levis to the Raiders, Tashaun. So I'll ask it this way. What did they ended up with Now, they ended up with Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech, who was the best dressed, gave the best commissioner hug maybe of all time, and is arguably the best edge rusher. A lot of people had him going number two to Houston and some mocks going into last night. What did the Raiders think about Will Levis? Hell, what do they think about Will Levis? Because there's reports that they were among the teams trying to get back into the first round toward the end of the night. And from what you know covering the league, what does the league think about Will Levis? Is it the toe? Is it something else? What do you know about Levis in particular?
Well, I'll start with the Raiders. While they did their due diligence on all the quarterbacks in this class for the most part, even though they signed Jimmy Garoppolo, they were still exploring adding at the position, even in the first round. You know, from what I gathered, you know, going into the draft, they didn't believe that there were four first-round caliber quarterbacks. They really only thought there were two, and the two that stood out were Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud. And so even if Anthony Richardson was there at seven, I don't think the Raiders would have ultimately taken him. And Will Levis was never really in the picture for me at seven. Like, we've done tons of mock drafts at the Athletic. I never made the pick taking him there for that reason. I just didn't believe that they were that high on him. Now, does that mean they wouldn't draft him overall? No. You know, I mean, they are picking at 38th overall in the second round. I mean, at this point, there's a decent chance he could fall to 38. I mean, there aren't a ton of teams early in the second round that need a quarterback. Even Hendon Hooker could be an option there at 38. And so I wouldn't completely rule him out, but it was never really a thing in the first round. And it kind of makes sense with the overall league view of him. I mean, obviously, he's still here for a reason. But at the combine, you know, you heard a lot of buzz about Stroud, Young, Richardson, but it didn't seem like anybody really loved Will Levis. You know, they didn't think he was bad necessarily. They like his physical tools. They liked that he played in NFL caliber offenses with some Shanahan influence at Kentucky. They respected that he played through injury last year and didn't have the best supporting cast. But when you take a guy in the first round, you're pretty much tying yourself to him as your guy. He better pan out. And I don't think anybody loved him enough. And as we see, he's still on the board in the second round. And so that's proven to be true.
So, and that brings me to I want to make another point. I was pissed last night watching and Will Levis, you know, he's going to be fine in life one way or the other. He doesn't need anybody to feel sorry for him. He doesn't need anybody coming to his rescue. But we've seen over the years, whether it's Geno Smith, whether it's Brady Quinn, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, we've seen a lot of guys be that guy that Will Levis didn't want to be, which is, you know, the camera's on you in the green room as you're waiting, as you're the agonizing wait where you're playing with your phone and your family's consoling you, this, that, and the other. What pissed me off last night, and I would love to see, you talking about receipts, Michael Hawley, an explanation of who came up with Will Levis had a point percentage chance of being available at the 20th pick. How the hell do you know? Because clearly, despite all the mocks, the league, Tashaun, as you just laid out, didn't feel the same way about Will Levis. And there were enough question marks throughout the process where last night shouldn't be that much of a shock. The only reason there was X percent chance, again, how do you calculate such a thing? An X percent chance that Will Levis was going to go earlier was because the machine hyped us up into believing that he was somehow entitled or a lot to go earlier. And that's unfair to him. That's why that pissed me off. It's one thing to watch the theater play out where it's like, okay, he's waiting. Yeah, because he's a quarterback that comes with the territory. But to then add insult to injury by saying there was this percent chance that he'd be here, that puts the onus on the kid as if something's wrong with the kid for lasting that long, as opposed to Michael, the league just didn't view him that way, as Tashaun just laid out.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know what? For both of you, you know, in science, in math, you got to have all the information before you can start to draw some conclusions. So you can't come up with the percentages unless you have counted everybody and figured out what they're likely to do. You're just guessing. That's a fake number. It really is. You're just kind of
totally
making it
fake.
Up. Based on what? You know, mock drafts? I don't know. But here's the real question I want y'all. Two very handsome, well-dressed men. I want you to explain this to me because I'm wondering about this. Will Levis planned out his suit for last night. This is my draft day suit. Now you're sitting there, nowhere to go. Yeah. What do you do today? Do you not show up? Do you wear the same suit? Do you accessorize? Can you wear the same? It's a blue suit.
That's like the NBA back in the day.
Hey,
like you packing one suit or two.
Or listen, as a protest, you come back, you wear the same thing. I'm going to run it back. I don't care what they say.
I think it's what do you do? Actually, hey,
Deshaun, what do you do?
I don't think he's going to. I heard. I think he's just going to stay in his hotel room. So, man, at that point, I'm pulling up. I'm in a sweatsuit now. Like, y'all don't take me. Y'all going to invite me to this room, put me on national TV. I got my family. I got my girl sitting next to me. You know, I'm dressed to the nines. I don't even get picked.
Y'all got enough content out of me for one draft.
You know, you know how much I pay for this?
Nike tech, please. At this point, I'm in a sweatsuit. I'm kicked back on the couch. I'm like this. Like, Nah, you're not getting me to dress up again. I'm good.
But real question. We were talking about it earlier, Tashawn, Michael, and I, talking about some of the picks that we liked. How about you? You looked at this draft. Now you have some time to sit back and reflect on round one. What stood out to you, or what were you excited about?
I think you got to give it up to the Texans. You know, I think we came down on them pretty hard once we found out that there were some rumors about them maybe going defense at number two, passing on a quarterback, which to me, that coupled with them winning in week 18 last year and putting them in a position anyway to where they wouldn't have the number one overall pick, that would have been hard to recover from. I don't think Nick Casario would have a job next year if that's how things played out. And in turn, he comes out with a guy that, in C.J. Stroud, not too long ago, he was getting mocked as the number one overall pick. He was the favorite. And he got a very good chance that he could be the best quarterback in this draft class. And then you trade up to number three and get a player who many consider to be the best player, period, in the draft class, Will Anderson. And so you get a potential franchise player on defense and offense. And while they had to give up a lot, you know, in terms of draft capital, they give up a first-round pick next year in addition to some picks this year, they have a ton of draft capital because they traded away Deshaun Watson. And so now you potentially find your replacement to Watson and Stroud. You find a foundational defensive player in Will Anderson. And while the Texans still probably aren't going to be that good next season, you have something that you can build on moving forward with a new, you know, first-year head coach in D'Amico Ryans, who he hasn't been a head coach before, but, you know, he gets praised from across the league. Everybody thinks he can do this job. So I think they've set themselves up in terms of having a long-term view to be a pretty exciting team one day.
So the Raiders, though, again, there was a lot of buzz, going back to that number two spot, a lot of buzz about Tyree Wilson maybe being the Texans pick and not a quarterback at the number two spot. He was one of those, like, and this is always, you know, talk about fake, the idea of somebody rising. It's like, no, like, we're just getting hip to who people like. But Tyree Wilson wasn't able to participate in the entirety of the draft process, but a freak. You know, and again, best dress, best hug, so he's got that going for him. What was the Raiders, because there was also talk about the Raiders maybe going offensive tackle, like a lot of connections to Skoronski out of Northwestern for them. What was the Raiders thinking in Tyree Wilson? What do they love about him, and what do you know about him in terms of your reporting about him as a prospect?
Yeah, and I reported yesterday that he was their top-rated edge rusher in the entire class. That's even over Will Anderson. Although that it gets a little easier to say after Will Anderson's already off the board, but I believe they truly thought that. You know, and he fits their scheme. You know, Patrick Graham, their defensive coordinator, he runs that multiple scheme up front. He switches between a 3-4 and a 4-3. And Tyree Wilson is a guy that in college, he played interior defensive line. He played traditional defensive end. He lined up as an outside linebacker. And he's a guy that even though they have Chandler Jones and Max Crosby, they can get all three of them on the field together and you know, try to rush the opposing quarterbacks. Obviously, in the division that they're in with Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, even Russell Wilson, I know everybody's burying him, but he's still a good quarterback in my mind. You know, you need guys that can get after the quarterback and create havoc. And they believe that he had the best chance of doing so. They did like other players there. You mentioned the offensive lineman, but also defensive tackle Jalen Carter was still there. I think he, you know, was also somebody that enticed them. But for them, you know, given what happened in 2021 with Henry Ruggs driving under the influence and causing an accident that, or causing a crash, that killed Tina Tintor, and then Jalen Carter, the nature of his off the field issues with speeding being involved and people losing their life.
Too soon.
I think ultimately that was just something that organizationally wasn't going to get the green light. And so even if they had Jalen Carter above Tyree Wilson, which I think they probably did in terms of as an individual player, Tyree Wilson has a clean bill of health in terms of his off-the-field track record. He's a hard worker. He did have a foot injury last year that prematurely ended his season, but obviously for them to take him at number seven, they feel pretty good about his ability to bounce back, and he said yesterday he'd be better, ready to go by training camp. And so even if he isn't a starter this year, which he probably won't be behind Jones and Crosby, this is more about the future. You know, by 2024, I would expect for him to be a starter, and it's indicative of their overall plan to build for the future, take their time, and they're realistic about where they're at. Like last year, they went for it. They were trying to compete. This year, they know, all right, like our roster isn't that good. This is going to be a slow build. And Tyree Wilson is a pick that reflects that.
That sounds like a perfect spot for a quarterback to sit behind Jimmy G, right? Like, it feels like they got...
It has to be the right guy, though. You know, you can't just take a quarterback right. just because one's there. And I just didn't like Will Levis enough to take him at 7. Him and Hooker, the same thing. They did, you know, reportedly call about trying to trade back into the end of the first round. And so we'll see here, as I said, you know, there's a good chance that Levis and Hooker are still there on the board at 38 when they come up in the second round. And so just because he didn't take a guy in the first round doesn't mean he wouldn't take one in the second round. I mean, the guy that was just the Raiders quarterback for a decade was a second round pick in Derek Carr, and he worked out. I know usually second round quarterbacks don't work out, but hey, Jalen Hurts was just in the Super Bowl last year. What was he? A second round pick. And so you don't have to take a guy in the first round to develop him behind Jimmy G. There you go.
I mean, so, look, he took a whining role to get to this point, you know, but he still was a second round pick. You know, he came in the door as a second rounder.
Right. So, and so it doesn't mean that these guys are off their draft board. He still might take one.
We see Connor Rogers is best players available. That's from Connor's perspective. I'm just wondering about you, Tashana. If you look at these guys, beginning of second round tonight, who's out there that you like the most? Just the player, I'm like, wow, I can't believe this guy's still there. I really like him. Who's that guy?
Yeah, I think you got to throw Levis and Hooker in there, but I think the player, the individual player that stands out the most to me is cornerback Joey Porter coming out of Penn State. You know, he's a guy I thought would have gone in the first round. I like his size, his length, his physicality. He doesn't necessarily have high-end speed or athleticism, but I think he's a day one starter as an outside cornerback who could lock down that position for years to come. And for the Raiders, I don't know if you looked at their depth chart lately, they ain't got no cornerbacks. And so if he's there at 38, I think even if a Levis or Hooker or both are there, I would probably consider taking Porter over both of them. You know, defense is really in rough shape. And I really don't think they need to force it at the quarterback position. Obviously, they gave Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, you're paying him $25 million a year. You're essentially locked into him for 2 seasons. Why not beef up the defense, let Jimmy G roll out there and maybe try to target the quarterback position later in the draft or put it off for an entire year?
T. Reed, thank you, bro. We appreciate it, man. Keep up your great work. Enjoy the rest of the draft. And we will talk to you soon.
Appreciate y'all having me.
All right, bro.
Anytime. Thank you.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
For you as a coach, is it kitchen sink kind of game? You throw everything at it? Is it things that you anticipate doing that people haven't seen before from this team?
You know, it's a certain degree, but, you know, you want to be careful, too, because, like I said, now, if this was game 4 and we were down 0-3 or something like that, then, you know, now you throw the kitchen sink and you do stuff like that, but you make some adjustments. You show them where we could be a little bit better, but you have to be careful because you don't want to show them crazy adjustments because now they can feel or perceive that as you panicking a little bit.
In keeping with the athletic theme, Sam Amick from The Athletic is with us now, joining us from the Chase Center. Listen, man, for Michael and I's sake, we need this to at least go 7. Okay?
Yes.
Like, you know, we're ready to get into it. You probably already know who we got to deal with around these parts all the time when the Warriors are winning. We at least need this to go seven. But I mean, you know what? I'll try to get a 2-for-1 here in the interest of time. Do we get a couple of game sevens in the Western Conference featuring two teams that we would love to see in the second round? That'd be a high profile matchup. But one by one, I'd love to ask you about the Kings' chances of extending this series on the road. And for that matter, following Desmond Bane's guarantee, the Grizzlies' chances of extending their series with the Lakers on the road and getting it back to game seven. So what do you think? Big night of ball tonight.
Gentlemen, I think that resident Warriors supporter Natalie is going to feel pretty good after tonight if I had to handicap it. I think the Warriors, they feel like they have figured out the Kings and what the operation, what they do from Sabonis on out. I admittedly, you talk about what we want. I mean, I live 20 minutes from Golden 1 Center. It would be fun to go cover a game seven, regardless of what happens. I'd be down for that. Part of me does hope that, we get to see that. But the Warriors reminding people who they are again and looking like that group is, to me, impressive yet again. On the flip side of that, Lakers, I don't know, man. Like, they're so inconsistent. I think they close out tonight. That's what I would handicap, but Memphis is, they got that spirit and they got that kind of go ahead and doubt us type energy and Desmond putting the guarantee down. I don't know what to think. Lakers better do it tonight though, because LeBron at his age, AD with everything he always deals with, one day off in between, going back to that type of environment would be brutal. So, you know, but I think we're talking Lakers and Warriors win tonight.
All right, you said the Warriors have figured out, they figured out what the Kings do. What's the number one thing you think they have mastered that maybe they didn't have in games one and two?
I mean, Sabonis, the first two games, the Kings' defense was shockingly good for a team that was terrible defensively for most of the regular season. So that jumps to mind. But I think offensively, guys, like, I had Domantas Sabonis fifth in MVP this year, and I'm not alone. There's a lot of votes that are coming his way for that. And now in this series, the question is, wait a minute, he's not in this series. He's not even number one on his team. But Kevon Looney and Draymond Green, what they've done defensively, if you handicap the entire league and said, let me pinpoint a couple bigs who can guard Sabonis as well as anybody, those two guys would probably be in your top five, maybe top three. They've been incredible cutting off his passing lanes in terms of like being physical down low. And he's just not playing all that well. And if you take him away from what the Kings do, they're not going to win a seven-game series.
Switching conferences, we talked about how sexy a Lakers-Warriors conference semifinal would be in the West. Yep. Heat-Knicks doesn't get much more nostalgic than that. And now we finally, sorry, Miss Jackson, as the Celtics said, we finally have Sixers-Celtics matching up in Eastern Conference on the other side of the bracket. Is that, with all due respect to Jimmy Butler, who I've said is the player, if I got a game to win that matters, I want Jimmy Butler over anybody. Sure. With all due respect to Jimmy Butler, to the Knicks and how they've looked so far in these playoffs, is Celtics Sixers the de facto conference finals in the East?
It feels that way, but man, it's a hell of a sideshow that we're all gonna enjoy to have Jimmy and the shocking the world and then being something to watch as well. But if you got to pick between the two, absolutely. I mean, the Celtics don't look like a team that is hell-bent on dominating their way through the postseason to right the wrong of last year. You know, we've had teams that when they lose in the finals, the Spurs some years ago, when they lost to the Heat, they were kind of on a mission. The Celtics are not giving that energy. They had to fight to get through the Hawks. And the point there is that against Philly, which did take care of business against the Nets, and with Joel Embiid having extra time to get healthy with what he's dealing with, I think it's squaring up to be a fun one, to be a really good one. And it is obviously crazy that in the East, where we thought that the elites were going to have an easy time early on, that Philly's the only one. So right now, I feel like, you know, they might have the edge there.
Mike, that graphic that we just showed, Mike, you probably already know this, but this blew my mind. The Celtics are 23-1 when Brown and Tatum both score 30. That's the best by any duo in NBA history, record-wise, when two teammates score 30. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, that's surprising. You know, and Sam mentioned, you know, kind of the surprising element of, you know, the number one seed. You know, alluded to it. The number one seed in the East is no longer here. And there are many things to take away from that. One, let's just say on the court, Milwaukee losing to Miami. I'd just like to get your take on it. And then you had an interesting piece on this relationship between players and stars and the controversy over failure. So if you could address those two and just get us into that conversation, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks on the court, I'm as shocked as everybody else. It's funny because as a voter, we're not supposed to take playoff performance into account, right? But I would be lying to you if I didn't admit that when I voted for Giannis this year for MVP, it was way down on the list, but there was kind of this sentiment in my head of like, at least I know I'm voting for a dude who does get it done in the playoffs. Little did I know that now, just like Jokic the year before, we would have, if he wins it, which he's not going to, that would be my MVP vote going to a guy who was bounced in the first round. I'm shocked. You know, his injury played a big part, but even when he was out there, they did not get the job done. Jimmy was incredible. It made no sense. Nobody thought that he could do this. Now, if you talk about what happened post game, and this is media stuff, but I think, the fans enjoy getting close to the game.
Hold on, Sam. Because once we get into that part, I'm not going to want to come back here. So I'm going to interrupt you and interject now because, Michael, this may not come as a surprise to you. That was pretty revealing to me. So you just said that you're not supposed to factor in postseason expectations before casting your vote for regular season MVP. But in the back of your mind, you said, and I appreciate your transparency, you said you'd be lying if you didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
How many people, how many voters do that? Because that, like, that shocks me to hear that. Because it's like, it's a regular season award, and I don't have to tell you that.
It is. I can't speak to how many people feel that way. I certainly don't think I'm alone. But I think that, so I vote for Jokic the last 2 years. What tugs at you a little bit is that general idea that just from a basketball standpoint, that when the games mean a whole lot more on that playoff stage, if this particular player in his style and the way he competes and the way he gets the job done, if it is more schemable than some of the other guys and you feel like he's going to have a short runway no matter what. The Warriors series last year is a good example. Obviously, no Jamal Murray, no Michael Porter Jr., nobody thought the Nuggets were going to win that series. But independent of that, the Warriors coaching staff had zero, lost sleep at night when it comes to figuring out how to take advantage of Jokic on the defensive end, beat him up there, run pick and roll his direction every single time, and then, figure out offensively how to circumvent his superpowers. And that is the stuff you try to unpack, is the question of, yes, who was the most dominant this regular season? But I think you care a bit about if it is, and I would never come within a million miles of calling Joker's game gimmicky. I just don't know the other word. There is that question. Is it going to hold up on the biggest stage? And Giannis, the human part of voting is this. If you've been doing this in the league almost 20 years, if you ask me short list of performances that left an imprint on me, Giannis doing what he did to Phoenix in the finals a couple of years back is at least the type of thing where you never have those kinds of questions about who he is as a player. And the part I'm acknowledging, like you said, being transparent, is that it's an undercurrent, right? It kind of informs your ultimate opinion of that player.
Gotcha. Okay, so sorry. Thank you for that. So now,
yeah. No, for sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say back to the post game question that everybody was talking about and the fallout from it and your macro perspective on the failure question.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the discussion to me, it's funny, guys. I didn't take much philosophy in college. I do remember in philosophy 101 that there's not a right answer, right? Like it's a discussion. And that's kind of where I see this discussion. The rings culture, that whole all or nothing idea that if a guy wins a chip, then he's the best. And if he doesn't, he's a failure. It's a discussion. I like Giannis's point of view. And on the media side, our guy who covers the Bucks and has for quite some time, Eric Name, I thought asked a good binary question. Now, it was closed-ended. That journalism-wise, you try to go open-ended with questions. But it was binary, which means that he knows Giannis's personality well enough to know that while he might get a little irritated by that question, it would compel him to be honest. And that's what he did. Mm. And then you got to understand the way that Giannis saw
this fascinating question. So he knew
100%.
He purposely asked it that way because he knew how Giannis would respond.
He's covered Giannis since 2015. Now, a quick funny story, if we have time, that I didn't write this in the column, but I think Eric would be fine with me sharing. In Giannis's comment, he was personalizing it with Eric, and he says, you know, Eric, do you try to get a promotion every year? Isn't that the goal? I laughed when I saw that comment because the summer after the Bucks won the title, I saw Giannis at Summer League in Vegas, and Giannis and I and Eric, this reporter, had actually done a lot of different conversations where we've been around each other a lot in the finals. So I see Giannis at Summer League, and I was just kind of playing with him a little bit. I was like, Giannis, you hear about the biggest free agent pickup of the summer? And he looks at me a little confused, like, what are you talking about? And I said, Eric Name, Bucks beat writer, just got a new contract. Look at this guy. You know, and he kind of smiled, like he's got affection for Eric, respects him.
Yeah.
And Eric, 98% of the year, guys, if you heard the type of stuff he gets into, it's not my style at all. He is asking about pick and roll coverage. He's asking about, why are you hedging here? Like, it is hardcore basketball. But in this kind of a moment, when they crashed like they did, I think it was fair. And I think the audience has a better understanding of who Giannis is as a person now because of that question, and that is the role the media plays.
Interesting. I just don't want to get to a place, Sam, where we say there is no failure in sports. Because that's like, sports, failure is integral to sports. It's how you respond and recover from failure. Like, if we don't have failure in sports,
I mean,
we got
Michael Jordan had his commercial, right? The MJ commercial back in the day, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I respect Giannis' life and worldview.
Yeah.
I respect his worldview, but I just disagree with it, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? But I think
I probably
also
do too.
Yeah, but it's failure, but it's redeemable. We're not talking about failure that can never be repaired.
Right.
So I think that's a disagreement.
Right.
And my last thought, guys, I feel like Giannis honestly thinks that the premise is that if you call it a failure, like I wrote, like, that you wasted the last year of your life. Like, that's not what people are saying. And I do think
that's good stuff.
That's what he doesn't want to admit to that.
Good stuff, Sam. Thank you, brother.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. See you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start with CJ. Really productive player. We had him in the building for a visit. He's, I would say, as competitive a player. Has an edge about him in a good way. Loves football. Wants to compete. Wants to be great.
My mission right now is just to accept the opportunity that I've been given and really just take it full go. And I'm really excited to go be teammates with the guys in the locker room, have fun with them, build relationships, build bonds, have team camaraderie. I think that's something that I bring to the table really well, is just how I can lead. And I'm really excited to get in that locker room. And I haven't been in the locker room in 4 months, so I'm really excited for that.
Mike Patton brings perspective on all things AFC South as the creator of the Touring the AFC South podcast. He brings that knowledge to the table right now, brother from another. Mike, good to see you, brother. I went into this first round being like, the AFC South going to be the story, given that they had three teams in the top 12, two picking twice, and then the Jaguars being real slick at the back end of the first round, everybody chasing what they have in Trevor Lawrence. So start with the Texans, a lot of people's big winners picking C.J. Stroud at 2, Will Anderson at 3, trading back in for the price of the 12th, 33rd picks this year and a 24 first and third next year. How did the Texans do?
I think the Texans did great. I mean, honestly, they came into this draft with a lot of different things they needed to fill, mainly quarterback and a pass rusher. With C.J. Stroud, you come in there, you get him in there, and he is probably the most talented quarterback out of all of them, in my opinion. He definitely is ready to play right now, and he fills a hole, and basically they couldn't go back to Davis Mills being the quarterback again on that team. Now you have defensively with the number 3 pick, you have Will Anderson Jr. They did not have any pass rush. Jerry Hughes Jr. was their leading pass rusher, and unfortunately he's very long in the tooth, and you can't depend on that type of production next year either. So adding Will Anderson Jr., adding C.J. Stroud definitely fills two holes on that team and allows them to kind of, you know, kind of progress forward and maybe compete for the AFC South this year.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, so if you look at it that way, you know, they clearly had a great night of drafting. The Texans did. But last year, the Jaguars won the division dramatically that last game against the Titans. Whose division is it? After this draft, I know it's early, night one, we got a couple more to go. Whose division is it in 2023? Do you give it to the Jaguars, or you got somebody else?
You got to still give it to the Jaguars at this point. I mean, look at it. You have Marvin Jones Jr. He leaves, and you have Calvin Ridley you had in a trade you got last year for a fifth-round pick. And they're still basically adding to those pieces to the team. And they're the most solid, the most developed team in the division right now. The Titans and the Colts are still trying to find themselves again. And the Texans are still trying to find themselves also. So, yes, right now it's still the Jacksonville's division.
I give Jacksonville a lot of credit. Trent Baalke and our guy Doug Peterson, the official coach of Brother From Another, I give them a lot of credit because they didn't pick up high, but they traded back twice. Ended up with Anton Harrison from Oklahoma to take the place of the now suspended Cam Robinson. And Michael, they got their own second and third tonight. But then on Saturday, you're going to hit the Jaguars a lot. 3/4, 1/5, 3/6, and 2/7.
Come on.
So they got a chance to add a lot of roster depth. I love just the maneuvering that they did yesterday. All right, back to the top of the draft, though, Mike. The Colts taking Anthony Richardson. And I get the sense that Indianapolis would prefer to watch him struggle with them than be great somewhere else. Like, I think they were enamored by that ceiling more than they were scared by the floor. What do you think about the Colts bringing in Anthony Richardson, who a lot of people think just needs more experience and more seasoning?
Honestly, I think it's a great move. If you look at their coach, Steichen, he actually coached Justin Herbert in the with the Los Angeles Chargers. And then also look at him and, you know, Jalen Hurts. With Anthony Richardson, he can actually accentuate his strengths, you know, allow him to run the football, but also he can help him in the passing game, put him in positions to succeed with the weapons that they have, like Michael Pittman Jr. and Jonathan Taylor, a little bit of maybe a quarterback option read type of things as well. So, you know, you definitely get a quarterback that's going into a right situation with a great guy with quarterback.
The bottom fell out of that organization last year. Yeah. It seems like a good – they're better than the 4th overall pick as a roster feels like.
You like that pick, Mike?
Right. Yeah, I actually like that pick. I thought it was the best fit for Anthony Richardson, to be honest.
So, and lastly, the Titans. Our guy, Rand Carthen, first draft. They end up with Peter Skoronski out of Northwestern at 11. Will Levis and Hendon Hooker from right down the road at Tennessee are still on the board. Do the Titans get in on this arms race? You got three teams, they got their QBs now. What do the Titans do at QB? They got a new stadium. Who's their new face of the franchise once they move on from Ryan Tannehill?
Well, the great thing is they got probably about 4 years to figure it out. New stadium probably won't be around in 2027. But honestly, taking a look at it, I'm not sure they draft either Levis or Hendon Hooker. If you have to pick, I'd say Hendon Hooker. But to me, in my opinion, I think they need to spend that time developing Malik Willis. And with bringing in Peter Skoronski, you add him to that team, you add a lineman that can help blow open holes for Derrick Henry and give him a little bit more of an actual opening to run the football instead of getting touched in the backfield every single time like he did last year.
Mike Patton, appreciate you, man. Thanks for helping us tour the AFC South. They running things. They on the come up. All four teams.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Mike, you and I are both men of faith. I think everything's going to work out for two guys tonight in particular. Joey Porter Jr. going to still be a Steeler as long as they don't trade the pick at 32. And Will Levis, I'd love to see him go 36 and learn under Matthew Stafford with Sean McVay. It would all work out great for him.
It would all work out great. That would be great. That's a good move. Can't wait to see it.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.